This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our message to those nations that promote and perpetuate this framework is simple. You are using a tired and failed formula.
That's Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera telling the SADC summit that wealthy nations must stop hoarding vaccine. Details coming up. Also, 37 people are massacred by suspected jihadists in Niger. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera has urged Southern Africa leaders to increase efforts to combat the coronavirus pandemic and called on wealthy nations to stop hoarding vaccine. He was speaking at the annual summit of the 16-member Southern Africa Development Community in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Speaking during the televised function Tuesday, President Lazarus Chakwera, who is also SADC's current chairperson, said it was concerning that despite the devastating social and economic impact of the COVID-19, wealthy nations continue hoarding vaccine. Statistics show that less than 2% of Africa's population is fully vaccinated. That is low compared with the rest of the world. Chakwera blamed it on inequalities and disparities in the distribution and production of COVID-19 vaccine. He said it is symptomatic of an old geopolitical framework that regards some human lives as more worthy of saving than others.
Our message to those nations that promote and perpetuate this framework is simple. You are using a tired and failed formula. African countries are full members of the global community, period. As such, for the sake of the dignity of all human beings everywhere, we as Africans have a moral duty to refuse to be treated as second-class citizens.
Chakwera said that thinking would make it difficult for the region to reach herd immunity and reduce high infection rates. Dr. Vera Songwe is Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. She says the Africa Vaccines Acquisition Task Team, put together by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, has procured 400 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine for the continent. Songwe also said Africa needs to do more than just procure vaccine.
We also need to produce on the continent. The SADC region is demonstrating its capacity to do that by starting in South Africa with the production of vaccines in South Africa. This is, for us as a continent, I think a first demonstration that Africa working together, coming together, can effectively build forward better sustainably in the crisis.
The summit also aims to promote regional trade and building a regional defense force after its first deployment to fight insurgents in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. Speaking through a translator, Mozambican President Philip Nyusi thanked the SADC for authorizing the deployment.
We congratulate countries of the region for the brotherhood and prompt solidarity demonstrated by the deployment of SADC standby force capabilities in the spirit of the SADC Mutual Defense Pact, which was launched on the 9th of August 2021 in Pemba City.
Nyusi said he would speak more on the issue during a closed-door session. The summit is expected to end Wednesday when a communique on resolutions will be read. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Nigeria began a second phase of nationwide coronavirus vaccinations yesterday amid an upsurge in cases of the Delta variant. Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, aims to vaccinate at least 40% of its more than 200 million people by the end of the year, but at the current rate is falling short. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Vaccination centers across the country opened Tuesday after an official rollout ceremony held in the capital, Abuja. Authorities say 4,080,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine donated by the U.S. government will be distributed to citizens in coming weeks. Ndayo Aiwat is the executive secretary of the Abuja Primary Healthcare Board.
We are very hopeful that we are going to meet the needs of most of the people that have been calling in. Remember, we are still expecting more, but the AstraZeneca, the Johnson and Johnson, they are all coming in. So it's good news for us.
Nigerian authorities aim to vaccinate 40% of its population, or 80 million people, by the end of this year, and another 30% by the end of 2022. But authorities say it is difficult to secure vaccine due to what they call hoarding by richer countries. Faisal Shuaib is the executive director of the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency, NPHCDA.
It is important for every country to have access to the COVID-19 vaccines if we're going to be able to eradicate COVID-19. There's no such thing as a partial eradication. So it is important that there's fair and equitable access to the vaccine so that as one global community, we're able to eradicate the COVID-19.
Nigeria, like other countries, is currently grappling with an upsurge in coronavirus cases caused by the deadly Delta variant. In March, Nigeria received nearly 4 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine through the WHO-funded COVAX facility, an international aid initiative that seeks to ensure global access to vaccine. Last month, Nigerian lawmakers approved some $2.4 billion in additional funding to help the government procure COVID-19 vaccine and equipment for the military. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Human Rights Watch says officials in Ethiopia's capital are carrying out rampant arrests and enforced disappearances of Tigrayans, including small children. Human Rights Watch researcher Latita Bader says the government should immediately stop the ethnic profiling, which has cast unjustified suspicion on Tigrayans. According to the Associated Press, the report comes as U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman visits Ethiopia in the latest effort to press the government and Tigray forces to stop fighting. However, it appears that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed will not be meeting Feltman, as state media report. He is traveling today to Turkey. This week, election officials in Zambia announced a landslide victory for opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema over incumbent Edgar Lungu. The country's successful and peaceful polls are giving hope to many in Zimbabwe and elsewhere in southern Africa. For some analysts, it may be the start of a wave of democratic change and peaceful transitions of power through transparent electoral processes. Eddie Gando gives us more on the story.
Zimbabweans across the divide are welcoming what observers say is a stunning and unexpected poll victory by the opponent of an incumbent president. Country's Electoral Commission's chairman, Isao Chulu, declared that Hakainde Hichilema received over 2.8 million votes versus over 1.8 million votes for Edgar Lungu. Observers in Zimbabwe say that Zambia's electoral body has set an example of independence by declaring a winner despite the declaration by incumbent Edgar Lungu that the vote was not free and fair. Lungu, however, yesterday conceded defeat. George Charamba is the spokesperson for President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Charamba is on record for having called Hichilema and Zimbabwean opposition leader Nelson Chamisa sellouts. But in the wake of Hichilema's victory, Charamba tweeted that he hopes for continued cooperation with Zambia, given the two countries' historical and cultural ties. He also says that incumbent and incoming leaders had reached out to his government. Lusaka and Harare have ties dating back to the days of Zimbabwe's liberation struggle when Zambia hosted the movement. Nelson Chamisa, the leader of Zimbabwe Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, has welcomed and congratulated the Zambian opposition leader's victory, noting Hichilema's long journey of turmoil, tenacity, arrest, detentions, torture, and assaults. Swithin Chiworodza is the spokesperson for the MDC Alliance in Bulawayo province.
What is fact is that President Hakainde Hichilema has always been our friend. His political party has always been our friend. And what we expect is to have an enduring relationship into the far and foreseeable future. The election in Zambia also speaks to the success of military outfit that respects the people.
Political analysts have attributed the Zambian election results to what they call the Kenneth Kaunda effect and legacy of peaceful transition of power by Zambia's founding father. Zambia's then ruling party UNIP was handily defeated by the Levi Mwanawasa movement for mass democracy in 1991. The newly elected Hichilema will be the seventh president since Zambia's independence 57 years ago, compared with Zimbabwe's two in 41 years. Observers note that democracy is very much alive in Zambia compared to Zimbabwe. Analyst Thomas Tole concurs, saying that state institutions such as the Zambia Electoral Commission and the military played a critical role in delivering the victory for Hichilema, and Zimbabwe can draw lessons from the experience.
It speaks to the professionalization that we are seeing, where there is need for the security sector to be professional in its character and form and in its discharge of duties. And we have a lot of examples across the continent where the will and aspirations of the people have been subverted by the military or some sections of the security sector. But what we have seen in Zambia over the years has been that the transition and the transfer of power in that country happened without any attempt by the military or the security sector to subvert it.
Another political analyst says that the election outcome is not surprising, given that, in his opinion, democracy has become a cultural norm in Zambia.
Well, it is important to note that Zambia is an established democracy. It might be still fragile, but it is an established democracy compared with the dictatorships that run throughout the African continent. So lessons learned in this particular instance is that the body that was running the election stood by the laws, by the results, stood by the facts that were coming from the ground, regardless of what the president was complaining about.
Zimbabwe's main opposition challenger, Nelson Chamisa, was narrowly beaten by incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa in the hotly contested 2018 elections. They were followed by violent protests leading to the death of six people by security forces. Zimbabweans across the divide have welcomed Zambia's elections, expressing the hope that Zimbabwe's 2023 polls will deliver a free and fair outcome. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
37 people have been massacred in Niger by suspected jihadists. The French news agency AFP reports that the government today has declared 48 hours of national mourning, with flags being flown at half staff. The attack took place in the village of Dariede by gunmen on motorcycles. The village is located in the so-called tri-border area, where the frontiers of Niger, Burkina Faso and Mali converge. It's notorious for attacks by large mobile jihadists linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. The same village was hit in an attack in March that claimed 66 lives. The UN Special Envoy for Somalia says the situation in the troubled Horn of African country still remains dire due to increasing threats of terrorism, climate change, and the spread of COVID-19 pandemic. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Briefing a recent UN Security Council meeting on the current developments in the country, James Swan, the UN Secretary General's special representative for Somalia, said holding the delayed national elections was a crucial step to address the humanitarian and insecurity crisis.
Preparations for election security are key due to the continuing threat posed terrorist attacks and insurgent operations, including by encircling communities, especially so in Southwest State. UNSOM has so far in 2021 recorded reports of 708 Somali civilian casualties, 321 killed, 387 injured, mostly attributed to Al-Shabaab.
There are also alarming increases in sexual violence and violation against children being recorded, and these remain a priority area of concern for the United Nations.
The humanitarian situation in Somalia remains dire. The combined impact of conflict and climate change, including recurrent droughts and floods, as well as COVID, are likely to further exacerbate food insecurity. I would like to note the leadership of the federal government of Somalia in rolling out a national vaccination campaign with the support of the COVAX initiative. Humanitarian access and significantly more funding are required to continue to deliver life-saving support.
Following a prolonged period of uncertainty and heightened tensions, Somalia is now moving forward towards long-awaited elections. The United Nations says it remains committed to support the election process and beyond so that the country can renew its focus on peace and security. On the regional front, Kenyan leader Uhuru Kenyatta met with Somalia's Prime Minister Mohamed Roble and agreed to mend strained relations between the two countries. Kenya and Somalia have for months been engaged in a diplomatic row over what Mogadishu claims is Nairobi's violation of its sovereignty. Ambassador Francis Madeira is the African Union Commission's special representative for Somalia. He says AMISOM continues to play a critical role in Somalia.
Let me conclude on another positive note and welcome the series of important measures we have witnessed being taken by Kenya and Somalia since June. These developments remain significant in strengthening the relations of the two neighbors.
Meanwhile, Somalia has received 300,000 doses of Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines through the COVAX facility donated by the United States to expand COVID-19 vaccination coverage in the country. Since the outbreak of the pandemic, 16,103 confirmed cases, including 864 deaths, have been reported in the war-torn country. For decades, Somalia has experienced long-standing civil conflict. The militant group Al-Shabaab, which has links to Al-Qaeda, has been waging a violent insurgency to unseat the internationally backed government in Mogadishu. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
9 years after the infamous Marikana massacre, when South African police used live ammunition on striking minors, killing 34 and wounding 78, human rights defenders and workers' unions say victims and their families have yet to see justice. Amnesty International says it is unacceptable that the minors who had been seeking raises have been made to wait so long. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The killing of the miners who had camped on a hill outside the Lonmin Platinum Mine in Rustenburg on the 16th of August 2012 attracted local and international condemnation. The death toll was 44, including 10 workers and police officers who died in violence prior to the shooting. A commission of inquiry made far-reaching recommendations, including prosecution of the perpetrators, compensation of victims, and development of the surrounding mine communities. But Shanila Mohammed, executive director of Amnesty International in South Africa, says it is puzzling that no one has been arrested for the crime.
It is unacceptable that almost a decade later, the victims and their families are still seeking justice. The Falun Commission investigating the killings made a number of recommendations, most of which have yet to be implemented. The state must ensure that those responsible are prosecuted and that the families get the justice that they deserve.
With the government still to take full responsibility for the killings, families of the victims say the wounds are still fresh. Nezile Kalabile lost her son, Ngosiabo, who was the only breadwinner, and says life without him has been a nightmare. Advocate Dalimpofu, who represented some of the victims' families during the compensation hearings, says they are still suffering.
And then, of course, the third massacre, if you like, is the compensation, retribution, lack of apology, and all sorts of lackadaisical approach that you find from the side of the perpetrators.
Most of the victims' families have been compensated, but not those who were injured. The government was nowhere to be seen as unions and workers gathered to commemorate the massacre. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The government of the Republic of the Gambia hereby declares that His Excellency Gambian President Adama Barrow has rejected suggestions that he might crack down on the opposition if he is re-elected in December. Barrow sparked controversy with a speech that was taken as a threat to the opposition. Barrow's office issued a statement saying the president was only talking about how social media had played a role in feeding divisions and amplifying vitriolic debate with daily insults, abuse, innuendos, and ridicule. He cited his speech as an example, saying it has been grossly exaggerated, mischaracterized, and misinterpreted to score cheap political points. Barrow said he will work with National Assembly to ease the verbal sniping and avoid potential chaos that could result. In Botswana, the lack of tourism in the country's iconic Okavango Delta is enabling poachers to kill endangered animals, particularly rhinoceros, undetected. Botswana is battling a rise in the illegal killing of wildlife, with one poacher killed during a gunfire exchange with soldiers near the Delta last week. From Habrone, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
Reduced tourism due to COVID-19 has seen poachers move into the dense Okavango Delta to kill more rhinoceroses. Last year, Botswana indicated it was facing a poaching crisis, with more than 60 animals killed for their homes in a two-year period. In 10, Botswana soldiers have gunned down more than 20 poachers since 2019. The hunters, who are mostly from neighboring Namibia and Zambia, target the rhinoceroses found in the world-famous Okavango Delta. Botswana adopted a sterner measure akin to shoot to kill in order to deter poachers, but the problem has persisted, with the Botswana Defense Force, or BDF, killing a poacher last Tuesday during a gun battle. The dead man from Zambia was found with a 375 hunting rifle, which is used to kill big game. Poachers enter the country times undetected, and the lack of tourism has aided the bandits. Travel restrictions due to COVID-19 have meant fewer tourists visiting the Delta. Conservationist Neil Feet says tourists on the ground could help deter poachers.
It means that the BDF at least are on the ground and looking and doing. Again, yes, fully agree that more people on the ground, whether they be private sector or forces or whoever, are going to be a deterrent. Obviously, tourists in those areas will help, but you've got to remember a lot of these areas are very exclusive areas.
He says the government needs to involve non-governmental organizations in the fight against poaching.
Our government needs to get NGOs involved. There's a lot of good people out there willing to get involved and willing to put their money and resources into helping the government address this issue. But the government seems pretty much bent on trying to do things on their own. NGOs can work with those operators and with the armed forces to help. We can't expect the government to do everything. The pot is not bottomless, so let's get the private sector more involved.
Most tourists who visit the Delta come from other countries but have been locked out due to travel restrictions. Tourism is Botswana's second largest foreign exchange earner, behind mining, contributing more than 13% to the gross domestic product. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Havoroni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.